Called tonight's talk Nexus. I'm sure you all agree, one of the main advantages of living in the modern age is that we have the ability to travel. It can't be more than, say, 100 years ago that most people never ventured more than about 50 miles from home. Last year, apparently, over 600 million people flew over the surface of the planet in 1 year. That's, getting on for 1/10 of the entire population. Why do people travel? What does it give them? Well, it gives them so much. Adventure, knowledge, inspiration, new ideas, a way to get away from themselves for a little while, a way of getting away from the daily routine. I wondered whether there was one sort of basic reason that people wish to travel. One thing I got from my travels in India was a sense of freedom. A sense of freedom from the routine that I was so anxious to remove myself from. And I wondered whether it was a sense of freedom that was a major call for people's travels. One commentator suggested that in previous generations, people's spiritual aspiration, or if you like, their search for freedom, was vertical, meaning that they felt that freedom lay in making themselves virtuous and good in order that they might, upon death, enter into an eternal heaven. And that was symbolized by that vertical aspiration was symbolized by the church spire. He then went on to say that these days the spiritual aspiration, the search for freedom if you will, is lateral, and that is symbolized by the motorway. If you find that for whatever reason you can't get away physically, and you can't travel physically, you can still travel through books and films, and failing all that, many seek escape through daydream and fantasy. However, there's a fly in the ointment, as ever. One backpacker who went to India discovers, to his dismay, that the frustration, loneliness, and despair that he was trying to flee from in his own country, he took with him when he went on his travels. He discovered that he couldn't escape from his suffering simply by changing location. And to change tack slightly, we've heard recently of a new style of film. 3D films are now the in thing. I'm sure most of you have seen it, it's just us that haven't. A 3D movie of a perfect world. And yet, having seen this film, apparently some people have experienced deep depression. Real life appeared grey and meaningless by comparison. I wonder if they'd bought a little bit too much into the fantasy, bought a little bit too much into the hallucination. Perhaps there was an emotional attachment to this idea of perfection. So why do we travel, either physically or with our minds? Is it that we're trying to find that missing something, that perfection? But no matter how much we do it, it never seems to last. We always seem to be thrown back on ourselves. Now, in contrast, the Buddha found a peace and a happiness, a fulfillment and a perfection that does last. And what's more, he found the true direction to find that lasting freedom. It's within ourselves. You don't actually need to go anywhere. You're already there. Trying to move beyond the moment, this moment, he discovered was the problem, not the solution. The extraordinary for which everyone seeks, he discovered, is to be located within what we take so for granted, the apparently ordinary. The mind is naturally pure. This is what the Buddha discovered. Luminous, pure, happy, and a deep, infinite source of creativity and joy. And it's that mind is shared by all beings. I have it, you have it, non-meditators have it, meditators have it. Everyone has that luminous mind. However, for most people, as we know from the Buddhist teaching, this luminous, pure mind is hidden. And it's hidden by defilements. It's hidden by hindrances. It's hidden by forever travelling with our mind, wanting to be somewhere else, wanting to be doing something else, based on a rejection of now, a rejection of this moment, believing that this moment is boring, grey, dull, ordinary, and is nothing special. What we as meditators have to do is to discover what in Buddhism is called access concentration, or sometimes called purification of mind. I've called it for one night only, and I do mean for one night only, nexus. Everyone has the ability to enter into this naturally pure, happy, deeply creative and joyful mind. Everyone. Everyone does actually experience it. It begins whenever we are temporarily free from the hindrances, when the mind is temporarily free from wanting life to be different. That is access concentration. What does nexus mean? It's a Latin word. It's a means of connection, or the core or center of a matter or situation. So there are two themes there that need to be borne in mind. A core, a central core, and something that connects one thing to another thing. An airport is a classic instance of a nexus. It simultaneously functions as a point of arrival and point of departure. So it's somewhere you go to go somewhere else. So if each one of us has this nexus, this deeply pure, joyful mind, how do you get in it? How do you get to it? You can't, because you're already there. If you try to force your way in, your attempt will be rebutted. The more force you put in to try and find this nexus, this access point, the quicker and sharper and more deadly will be the rebuffal. Because you're already there, so the force you put in is just reflected straight away. Rather, the way in, if you want to call it that, is you get rid of the defilements in the mind, and this state of mind is what you're left with. You could almost say it's self-existing. It's what's there once the craving is not there. So I know that Alan has described it before as you have water and mud mixed together. And if you just leave a glass of this mixture, if you just leave it and let it rest, all the defilement, all the sediment will just drop to the bottom and you'll be left with pure water. Meditation, therefore, is not about trying to create a new and different mind beyond the one that we currently have. Rather, it's about cleaning up the mind that you have in order to unlock its inherent potential. And that is an infinite potential that it has. What I'd like to describe to you, what I think is the most direct way of cleaning up the mind. And one tip, which I found to be very, very useful, is to take this exercise out of what you'd normally consider to be meditation time. So it's an exercise. Perhaps, you know, as one example, you could, before you sit down to watch the television, you keep the television turned off, and you do this exercise for maybe five minutes. It's only a suggestion. You sit on the sofa and you do this exercise because you're not associating it with meditation. So you're not associating it with expectations that you have. When you sit down to meditate, there may well be an expectation that you think the mind ought to be calm, or it needs to be peaceful, or it needs to be this way or that way. If you take it out of that and just do it as a separate exercise, just to see what happens, you'll find that you don't have the same expectations. And what you do is you look directly into the mind in order just to simply observe whatever comes up. But that there has to be a real keenness to look closely at what's going on, rather than thinking that you have to somehow get rid of anything. It is just observational. So you just sit and say, right, I'm going to look really just directly straight into my own mind, and I'm just going to observe what's ever there, and I'm just going to name it. Now, it takes time to do it, to get used to doing it. You note the kind of distraction as it is. You observe it closely in order to understand what's actually happening. Say, for instance, sensual desire comes into the mind, so there's a daydream. The sensual desire starts. You're dreaming a fantasy about being on that planet you saw at the movies the other day, and how perfect it would be. And you note sensual desire, because the whole point of you doing it is just to be there with it and say, that's sensual desire. To note it, to name it, not to get rid of it at all, just to know it. And then you just watch to see what happens. Is there any result of that sensual desire? Does the sensual desire continue, having watched it so keenly? And then you wait for another thought. Another thought arises. Frustration arises. Oh, I could be watching the television. Anything could arise, but you watch it. What I'm trying to get at is the keenness of the observation. It's the most direct way to get free temporarily of the hindrances. Because what you find is that each time you note it, it ends. And then it's replaced with another one. But if you're there with it and you just simply note it, don't try to get rid of it, but just note it, it ends right there. If you keep doing that with sustained application and mindfulness, it's as if the thinking, you're not stopping the thinking, you're allowing it to come in. It's complete acceptance that it comes in. Total acceptance. What you find is the thinking thins out, just gets thinner and thinner and thinner, until it's so light and wispy, and it's just like clouds floating in an otherwise clear blue sky. And you find that the mind is actually, underneath, is actually very peaceful. And if you do it enough, you'll find that you'll get gaps appearing in the thinking. And the gaps will widen. The mind will be less interested in the thinking. It will be happy just to remain exactly where it is. I only point it out as a possible exercise that people can employ, but I found that to be very, very useful indeed. Because you learn so much about your own mind. You learn so much about your conditioning and your habitual patterns. It really is very, very good. Everyone can get free of hindrances if they apply themselves diligently and mindfully. And as the thinking thins out, you find this core this nexus, this core, this access concentration I mentioned before. At the very shallow end, it may very well feel like just your normal mind, but without craving for life to be different. It feels normal, it feels light, but it's nothing special. But if at that point you rest and just observe, say, the breath arising, but you're just resting because you're not wishing for life to be different than it is. You're not trying to make the mind into something else. You're just resting. A very interesting thing happens. You just rest and you just watch the breath rising and passing. And it's by magic, well, it's not really magic, but an array of beautiful mental factors begin to appear. Happiness arises. It seems to arise from the pit of your stomach and just go up like that. This wonderful sense of happiness. And this wonderful sense of contentment and ease. Because you're not trying to be anywhere, you're not trying to create anything, you're not trying to muck around with the mind at all. You're just resting, watching. And this wonderful sense of happiness, ease, and joy spontaneously starts to emerge. It's just like the mind's weaving it all together gradually. It's very beautiful, extremely beautiful states of mind. There's a wonderful sense of stillness, spaciousness, zest, piti in the Pali. Some people experience the rapture as a kind of that sense of the body locking down. It's actually very pleasant, but the body becomes immovable. It's a kind of piti. Many meditators will experience it from time to time. There's another one which is a sort of transporting zest, where you actually feel that you're moving through the air, or moving upwards, upwards and upwards. It's a very beautiful state. And of course you become very one-pointed. Now this is a core. This is a nexus. This is as the access concentration deepens, you get these lovely, beautiful, blissful states. Now, one of the difficulties with this is that people confuse it with nibbana, because it's got all the hallmarks: bliss, peace, stillness, no craving. Another aspect of this is that perceptions that you normally have in your workday, normal daily life, like this is me doing this, so the perception of self, that stops coming up. Perceptions of time and space, so the idea that I'm in a shrine meditating and how long is there left of meditation, disappear. And as I said, there's no craving at that time. And so people can believe that what they've discovered is nibbana. And so they stop. They don't recognize that what they have entered into is a temporary state. That it's the analogy that I came up with is a bit like going to an airport to go for your holidays and going into the departure lounge. You know, put down your deck chair, slap on some suntan lotion and say, I've arrived. That's why I call the talk Nexus, because it's not just that delightful state is not a terminus. It's not the end point. It's just the point at which you've in a sense arrived, ready for departure to other places. And so people can get trapped into believing that entering into these concentrated states is nibbana, is the purpose. But it's not. So when I say connection, nexus as in meaning a connection, going to different places, what do I mean? Getting into that deep, beautiful place, which is just here, it's just right here, reveals aspects of life that are previously hidden from us. The Buddha's teaching lists 8 fixed meditations that you can enter, jhanas, delightful fixed states of concentration. It's maintained that in as you go deep, more and more deeply into this access concentration, that you can come by what are called direct knowledges. The ability to travel in a mental body, divine eye, meaning being able to see things at a distance, with the mind, that is, not with the eyes, and also divine ear, being able to sit, to hear things at long distance, to know the minds of others, to know your past lives. As you go more and more deeply into concentration, you realize that there are infinite highways and byways that can become available through developing that skill in concentration. But it's all here now. It's not like you have to fight with your mind to get to another place. Rather, it's accessing what's already available to you. So there's, and we're talking about infinite possibilities just through learning how to concentrate the mind. There is one other direction that meditators can go when you find this access concentration, and that's what Buddha called the destruction of the kankas. It's the sixth direct knowledge. It's what we teach here, as opposed to getting into jhanas, getting into deep states of concentration. But you do need to get into at least the shallow end of access concentration. We're not looking at transience in order to get calm. We're getting calm in order to look at transience. And that's a fundamental point that needs to be understood, because people think that getting calm is the issue, and it's not. You get calm in order to, as it were, begin the true work of looking at transience. We look at all states arising and passing away in terms of, say, the six sensory fields. So it's the field of sight, the field of sound, the field of touch, the field of smell, the field of taste, and the whole field of mind, in order to see that everything in our experience has a nature to arise and pass away, and everything is conditioned by something else, so nothing stands alone. And I know you've heard it all so many times, but that is the way to the cessation of suffering. We have to come to see the emptiness of all perceptions. If we see a tree, the mind has a nature to delineate. It perceives something separate from the rest of the universe. In perceiving something as separate, it denies very necessary conditions that go to make the appearance of that tree possible. Just in mundane terms, there has to be sunlight, there has to be rain. There have to be nutriments in the ground that the roots can take up. There have to be so many other conditions for the existence of that tree. If we look at it at the ultimate level, then we'll say that what is perceived as a tree requires eye consciousness, visible object, a working eye base. It also needs mind consciousness and a whole raft of other mental factors that go to make up that experience. So is the perception tree really valid? Does it equate to something that really exists? As the meditation progresses, you find you no longer believe that the perception actually denotes anything real. You see the emptiness of the perception, and you see the emptiness of the thing perceived. To try and put this another way for you, how perceptions are all empty. The where are we game. I've tried it with a couple of meditators before. I don't know if it helps, but it helped me when I did it. Where are we? We're in a shrine room. Where's the shrine room? It's in the House of Inner Tranquility Meditation Centre. Where's that? It's in Bradford and Avon. Where's Bradford and Avon? It's in Britain. Where's Britain? It's on planet Earth. Where's planet Earth? It's in the solar system. Where's the solar system? It's in the Milky Way. Where's the Milky Way? It's in the universe. Where's the universe? I don't know. So if you don't know where the universe is, do you know where the solar system is? And you can work it all the way back to, well, do you know where you are now? No. And you're beginning to see the nature of perception. What does it denote, really? No matter where you say you are always here now. Regardless of whether you're here or wherever else you may go in your life, you're always here now. You were when you were born. You were before you were born. You were here now. There is only here now. There is nothing else. Insight cuts away the emotional attachments to life, to this, how can I describe it, as a three-dimensional technicolor hallucination that has no intrinsic reality. But that's not to say that it isn't anything. It's just this. The problem we have is the tendency to believe that it lies, the answer, freedom, lies elsewhere. And it doesn't lie elsewhere. It lies right here. It's to see that when you break down the perception and see the emptiness of all the perceptions, what you're left with is what you always had, which is vibrant, three-dimensional, technicolor fantasy world where nothing is really real. If you already have it, why do you need to go and create a movie or go and watch a movie that is trying to recreate what you already have? If you break down the misperceptions, the hallucinations, if you break down which breaks down the craving for life to be different, you'll see that you have it all. You've always had it. It has always been here. The freedom for which you search, you already have. True freedom has never been lost and has never been denied you. All dissatisfaction with reality is due to not having understood it. So the purpose of finding this nexus, this access concentration, is to get you away from craving life to be different temporarily so that you can look at actually what you've got, what you've always had, which you will always have. True enlightenment is freedom irrespective of one's relative situation. It doesn't matter whether you can concentrate or not concentrate. It doesn't matter if you're in a state of concentration or not in a state of concentration. It's just because if you're in a state of concentration, you're here now. If you're not in a state of concentration, you're here now. It's irrelevant. It really doesn't matter what you're doing at all, because it's just here now. The bliss of enlightenment is totally beyond the bliss of a concentrated state. Thank you very much.